Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Whole Scoop. I am Carol Ferraci, your host, a registered licensed dietitian, practicing for way longer than I want to admit, so we just won't go there. You know that we are the Health and Wellness Radio Show, and the stipulation for this show is that everyone must be credentialed, highly credentialed, on the topics of which we discuss. And so, whenever you tune into The Whole Scoop, you know that you're getting good, solid, foundational information. It's not just somebody down the street said something. That is not the premise of this show. These are the people that know, that shape what we know in the healthcare arena, and that's what I try to bring to you. So, that all being said, tonight's show is supporting the family caregiver. And before we get into any of that, I got to do some business here and tell you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topics of discussion, it's always recommended that you seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. The call-in number is 347-855-8894. That's 347-855-8894. You can also direct your questions and comments to our Facebook, the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. Please ask to join us. We are always interested in what you have to say. We're interested in what kinds of shows you want to hear. This show is a direct response to what I've been asked by a number of different people to provide. So it works. Facebook, the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group, please ask to join. We also have a website. I say it's a new website. It is relatively new. It's new in the last 6 months or so. It's thewholescoopradio.com. What I've done is I've started to not give as much on the biographies of the guests, and you can find it at thewholescoopradio.com, because if you've listened to this show before, you know that we always, always, always run out of time, because no matter what we tend to talk about, there's always more to talk about. So you can find some information on thewholescoopradio.com. The number to call in is 347-855-8894. I keep telling you that because if you have a question based on tonight's show, you'll want to call in and you'll want to wait it out. And if you have a question, press the number 1 to get in the queue so that I know that you have a question. We will be taking live questions later on, and at that point I'll call out the last 4 digits of your telephone number. So if you hear the last 4 digits of your number being called out, it means that I've put you out on the radio live, and it's time for you to ask your question. So we'll go with that. So as I said, tonight's show is on family caregiving. We have a wonderful guest. She's been on the show before. She's a wealth of information, and it's just an honor to have her here, and I'm so grateful for her time. She is Mary Ellen Philbin. I am going to read you most of the biography I have for her, just so you know who she is. She has served as the chief executive officer of Share the Care Incorporated, a nonprofit agency that provides services and support to family caregivers since it was incorporated in 2002. Prior to that, she was the program director for community-based long-term care at Share the Care's parent agency, the Christian Service Center for Central Florida. Share the Care serves over 1,400 families in Central Florida each year and is the largest agency of its type in Florida. It is the provider agency for Older Americans Act Title III-E National Family Caregiver Support Program, Florida's Alzheimer's Disease Initiative, the ADI Respite Program, is a vendor to the 4 area managed care entities under the Medicaid Long-Term Care Program and operates a robust fee-for-service program. Under Mrs. Philbin's leadership, Share the Care has received a variety of national grants and honors, and it has also been chosen as one of 14 organizations funded by different foundation by Jeanette Weinberg, Innovative Programs for Family Caregivers Initiative. With that, let's bring her on. I kind of messed that up a little bit. We'll let her tell you about all of that and what Share the Care does, because she's much better at it than I am, and I openly admit to messing that up and wholeheartedly apologizing before we even get started. So, Mary Ellen, hello, and please accept my apologies for messing that last part up there.
Well, I think it sounded pretty good. I'm impressed with myself, actually. But
should be.
No,
you're very impressed. I'm impressed with you.
You make me sound good.
Thanks so much for being here. You know, I kind of want to just give a couple of stats, let everybody know, yes, I was asked to do this program. I've been asked to do this topic a number of times. But, you know, if you're listening tonight, you're listening because you have a reason to hear about this, and it's important to you. But you should also know that every day 40 million people, friends, neighbors, relatives, help their parents, grandparents, relatives, neighbors, while with daily activities of living, including dressing, bathing, cooking, shopping, taking medications. There's a cumulative financial impact, and it's an unpaid labor from loving volunteers, and it's estimated to be about $470 billion, with a B for boy, dollars per year, a bill that healthcare system just can't afford to pay. So it's truly a labor of love, and it's just huge. So what I wanted to do tonight is I kind of want to just talk about that caregiving, what it really means. So maybe Mary Ellen, you and I can kind of break it down for the people who might be listening for the first time, not really knowing what they've gotten themselves into, and they're brand new versus the people that have been doing it for a while, and the kind of resources that are out there that are still available or may still be available or whatever. How do we shape this? How do we go for this? I can give more statistics, and we can talk about how, you know, the percentages of people are mainly women, but not necessarily, and it just depends. I do want to make one point before we really do get started, is that this is caregiving for anybody who needs caregiving. It's the disabled, the physically disabled, the mentally disabled. It's the healthcare disabled, those with Alzheimer's, not with Alzheimer's, those with MS, those that are younger, those that are older. Caregiving encompasses all age groups at any given time based on the needs of that person. Correct, Mary Ellen?
Right, and in particular, like Share the Care's mission is to provide services and support to family caregivers to allow them to keep their family member at home. And our criteria is that they're caring for somebody 18 or over, but then there's a whole another, you know, realm of people that are caring for disabled children, and that there are services for those folks too. But, I mean, if you think about the massive numbers of people and the reasons why people are providing care, I always tell everybody that it's not something I often have to really explain to people because every family has been involved in it in one way or another. So it's kind of the universal experience. If you're in a family, you're ultimately probably going to either be a caregiver or be cared for. And, you know, we're lucky to have family to do that for us. So
we really are. But can you do me a favor? I kind of lost you there for a minute. Will you just say that last part again?
Well, just that it's a universal, in my opinion, it's a universal topic because if there's family, then you're likely to be involved in care at some point, either be a care provider or a care recipient. And so when, you know, this topic comes up, if you haven't been involved in it yet, you may in the future be involved in it. I like to talk about, you know, there's the typical idea of who gets cared for. For example, I think a lot of people think about elderly people with some kind of dementia need care. But think about on the flip the spectrum over and think about all of the people that have developmental disabilities and their parents are their caregivers all their lives. And here I see often families that the parents are in their 70s or 80s. And they're caring for a disabled child who will never be independent, who's 40 or 50 or 60 years old. So, you know, it goes past any age, you know, categories. And it's all kinds of families. And everybody that has a family is likely involved in caregiving. So
that being said, and thank you for clarifying all of that and really, you know, pointing all that out because it's so important. And people just, I think everybody has experienced it in some way, shape, or form, but they haven't put it into perspective as to how huge this actually is. So let's just talk for a little bit and say, all right, you're new to this game. This is new. You have some elderly parents and they have health issues. And what can you expect? What should you expect? Are there expectations? Let's just say you've got Alzheimer's and you've got some other issue. I don't know. Let's just say there's dementia going on and so is it in your experience, is it appropriate to have expectations of those people, of the people that for which we care? And I know that everybody's different. I get that. But let's just take Alzheimer's. Let's just cut right to the chase of Alzheimer's or dementia. I know from personal experience with dealing with my dad with dementia, expectations had to kind of go out the window. But it's really, really difficult for the family member because this is somebody that you've known forever. You know their personality, and all of a sudden one day you wake up and you realize that they're different. And now, as a caregiver, the onus is on you to make their lives meaningful, but how do you do that and maintain your own life, and how does share the care come into helping family caregivers maintain what they have in terms of their lives? But yet have to now incorporate this whole new piece with a whole new person, kind of, that they know, but they don't.
Yes. I can tell by your question, it's easy to tell by your question that you've been through it because, that question had many facets, and that's because there's not an easy answer. Every family is different. But I know that... when a person has dementia, yes, their personality changes and all of those things. But maybe the story would best be told by an example from my day today. In the parking lot of our office, I ran into a caregiver, and she was walking her dog because she had just dropped off her mother. And so we started talking about her mother's situation, and she started telling me about how it felt when her mom first started meeting her, and her mother had a stroke. And one day she was completely fine and independent, in her daughter's words, the most independent person you would ever meet. And the next day she couldn't get herself a glass of water. And this was an only child, the daughter. And suddenly she went from having a completely independent and self-determining mother to a person that could obviously no longer live alone. And what did this mean for their life? And she told me, her own words was, "Oh, I'm glad you didn't talk to me 6 months ago because I was so angry." And, and I think probably that's one of the more normal first reactions, because you have a relationship with people and you understand where they stand and where you stand. And then an illness comes into play and changes the whole dynamic of your relationship. And you are the one that has to adapt because the other person can't. So she was talking about that, and she was talking about how much better it is now because she accepts it, and she accepts that her mother's limited and that her mother's never going to get better per se. And she's realizing that by taking help, and she'd been using Share the Care for several months at the point I talked to her today, she said that it makes a big difference. That if you give yourself a break from it and you let yourself have a few hours off and you attend to your own life and you realize that you're just because your mom's life is different and she needs your care doesn't mean that your life is over, that then you can bear it. And it takes an unbearable situation, a situation that in the beginning she didn't know how she would deal with, and turns it into one that where she has some of the tools that she needs in order to carry on, basically. So I don't know if that story is helpful, but...
That is absolutely spot on, because it's so true. It's like one day your life is, and the next day it's completely different. And then what do you do? And you kick into a mode where, you know, for me, I kicked into a mode of, okay, I just have to manage it. I just have to handle it. I just have to, you know, make it all work. And my mother kicked into the, but wait a minute, that wasn't my life, you know? And now what do I do? And so we were operating from two totally different planes of what to do. You know, I went into management mode. She went into, oh, my God, what just happened? And she had to get through all of the stages. And, you know, I just kind of looked past all those stages and went, well, this is where we are. And I never really had a chance. I would tell people, I never really had a chance to be a daughter to feel that because – there was so much work to do. There was just so many things to handle. There were just so many things to do for both of them because my mother was completely foreign to any of this, and my father was just totally not, you know, he couldn't participate. And so somebody had to do something, and you know, I am very familiar with the field, so I was able to do some things that maybe a lot of people couldn't or don't know to do. So... but it put a strain on everything, you know, just trying to teach my mom how to deal with my dad from a different perspective. And this was a man she was married to for 64 years.
And the dynamic's different depending, you know, if it's your spouse, your relationship changes in a different way than if it's your parent, you know, and the way that you handle it is going to be a different way. There's a lot of denial on the part of spouses about the level of disability because, I mean, this is your life partner, and you don't want to admit that this person's no longer self-determining and is no longer an equal partner in your life, and that you're going to have to take control over some of the, you know, the actual activities of daily living, like you said, in order for you to survive. It's not a partner, not an equal partnership anymore, you know, but you know, you never know which one's going to need it first. And I think that in concept, when you get married, everyone thinks, okay, well, you know, for better or for worse, and probably somebody will get sick, but it's really kind of an abstract idea until it really happens. And so, but you know, I think to get, you know, back to the, what do people need to do and all, I think the first thing that people need to do is identify that they're involved in a caregiving relationship, because a lot of people don't really see what they're doing as caregiving in the beginning. Like maybe your mom had to stop driving because she has cataracts or something, and so she needs a ride to the bank and a ride to the grocery store and things like that. That's the beginning of caregiving. She may be fine in every other way, but you still have a responsibility, and you have a responsibility on a regular basis. And often that's the front end of caregiving that ends up slowly and incrementally growing into a bigger role. It's not usually an overnight thing. It's something that happens slowly and develops over time. And a lot of times caregivers then find themselves, they realize they're a caregiver when the burden, I hate to use the word burden, but when they start to feel the activities that they're involved in as a burden, as something that is hindering them from being able to live their own lives in the way that they would choose. At that point, people really need to, and they don't always, but they need to seek some assistance. And often the people will ask their doctors, hopefully the doctors know where to send them, but there are a lot of programs out there, Share the Care being one here in Central Florida, that are available to provide both information and actual support services to families that are involved in this caregiving activity. So I think defining yourself as a caregiver, number one, realizing that you don't have to do it alone and that it's not a sign of defeat if you take help, and then reaching out for that help and being willing to accept it.
I think that's an excellent point in terms of realizing that you're a caregiver, because you're right. You just kind of kick in and you just kind of do these things and you don't think anything of it until you do think something of it. And then by the time that you get to that point of, okay, yeah, I'm in full-blown mode here, you kind of look around and you go, well, what just happened? Now what do I do? You know? And
right.
And I think it's, I think you made another excellent point in that people need to be able to feel what they feel. If you're angry about this, it's okay, but you got to move past it too. But you got to be able to feel it first so that you can then move through it. But if you don't stop to feel it, it can be a problem.
Right. Well, and you mentioned the problem solving, going into problem solving mode. Sometimes, you know, especially adult children, they go in, you know, we're going to make a plan for every inevitability, and we're going to make sure that we, you know, are prepared for all of this. And in the course of that, they don't deal with their own losses that they're feeling through the process, because they're taking care of the business of the issue and not listening to their own heart and understanding how they're feeling about, for example, in your case, about losing your father.
Right.
Which
exactly.
It's pretty important to be in tune with that.
Right. Yeah, it is, and you know, honestly, I went into the, okay, now what do I need to do for mom? And, you know, I think I know there's going to come a point in time where I need to just stop and actually feel everything I've chosen not to feel for this period of time, but, I would like to say maybe it would be different if there were siblings involved and there was some of this was split up, but I don't really know that because I don't have that frame of reference. So at this point, I'm sure that, you know, there are many people in my shoes at the moment and feeling the same kind of thing, and that makes it somewhat different but the same, and it's just everybody's got their own thing. So eventually we'll all come around to the same thing. We have to feel it.
Right.
But
sometimes it's after the fact for people, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when it all kicks in. You know, I recommend at the very front end of, you know, people's caregiving journey that they look for support groups, because, frankly, support groups are great because I think that caregivers – that do not know any other caregivers pretty much feel that they're the only ones that ever had these negative feelings about it. You know, that I'm angry about this, or I'm, you know, I'm frustrated, or I'm not always patient. And then all of those feelings lead to, I feel guilty about feeling that way. And,
right.
You know, anytime that you're asked to give up your life, even if it's the most worthy cause in the world, you're going to have some resentment and some negative feelings about it. To know that that's normal is such an important thing, because you're not alone. You're having normal feelings about the things that you're feeling. There's no reason to feel guilty, because this is just a part of life, a normal part of life, and normal feelings related to it. And if you meet other people that are willing to express that out loud, it makes it easier for you to express it. And then once you express it, you can deal with it, deal with the feeling, you know? So I suggest support as one of the first things people, you know, get involved in. It doesn't have to be a disease-specific one. We actually have a support group tomorrow. It meets once a month. But it is for caregivers of anybody, so any kind of caregiver. So it's not like it's not an Alzheimer's support group or a Parkinson's support group. It's a caregiver support group. Because I believe that caregivers have more in common with each other, regardless of what's wrong with the person that they're caring for, than they have different. So,
and they share resources too, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
people,
you know,
and people
really
are in different stages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know, like, you know, what might be available, somebody else already checked it out, and you can share resources of, yeah, well, this one's here, or that one I already know, or this one, you know, and it helps. It helps to have that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
That's a great,
so that's a
great
good,
idea.
Good first step for people. Find out about support groups. You know, and the next step, of course, after you realize you're a caregiver and you've accepted that your feelings are normal and all of that, is to look at services and see if there are services out there that can help you be a better caregiver, because I think a lot of people think that when they give up you know, some of the responsibility of care, that they're actually accepting defeat or something, that it's saying that they can't do it. I always say, no, it's saying that you're going to take care of yourself so you can be better at it and you can do it longer. So you build your strength, you know, your it's your version of going, you know, to the gym and working out. You have to give yourself a break to be yourself and have your own choices and things like that. So to take some services, usually we do adult daycare. We have 5 different adult day health centers in Central Florida, but we also do in-home respite for people that if the person that's disabled is more impaired and won't benefit from a group, the family member can get some respite in the home so that they can get out and do the things they need to do. And
well, let's,
we also do a lot of...
Let me just
go ahead
right there for a minute. Let's talk, let's define, in case people aren't familiar with respite. And I'm not trying to insult anyone. I just want to kind of define respite care versus something else. So can we just stop there for a minute and talk about that?
Sure. Well, I always say respite is like a rest or time off. And so respite can be different depending on what the need is of the patient. Some people can't, you know, they can't, not only can they not be left alone, but they are going to have personal care needs if their caregiver is not with them. In that case, it would have to be, you know, a CNA or something would be able to come in the home and take care of the person for a few hours so that the caregiver could get out. That would be a shorter break. If a person was able to use daycare, they were ambulatory and with help can use the restroom and with help can eat a meal and that type of thing, then they could go to adult daycare. They could go several days a week. They could go all day, several days a week. Sometimes adult daycare allows people to keep their jobs. So the caregiver doesn't have to choose between caring for their mother or keeping their position at work. So daycare is an alternative to choosing institutional care because you need to keep your job. So those are some of the forms of respite. There are other kinds. You know, any way that you imagine that you would take a break, maybe you want to go away for a weekend with your husband, but you have your mom. You could do a short-term placement in an assisted living facility, just a few days, so that you could have a few days off. That is another type of respite. So there, you know, I mean, any way that you can imagine that you could get a break, there are ways to arrange for that break. But I think people think a break is not, oh, it's not a medical need, so it shouldn't be primary on my list. Well, when we're talking about you've given up your normal life to take care of another person, you know, you're having all of the feelings we just discussed about giving up your life. Taking that break can mean the difference between success and failure at being a good caregiver. So taking care of yourself, vitally important to be a good caregiver.
Well, and let's just add something there too. I mean, if you don't take care of yourself and you're the primary caregiver now for somebody else, then how can you expect to, you know, provide what they need if you can't, if you're not capable because you didn't take care of yourself? So it's important to take that
right
time and deal with it.
And that's usually an argument we have to have, or not an argument, but a discussion that we have to have with spouse caregivers, because often it may be a person of advanced years is caring for another person of advanced years. You know, they're not 100% themselves, but they're given 110% taking care of their spouse. And,
right,
you know, I think the biggest worry people have when they give up some part of the caregiving is, you know, well, what will they do without me? What if I leave my husband here at the adult day center, what will he do without me? And I'm the best one to care for him. Well, but if you don't take the break and, you know, because statistically, many caregivers in the elder spouse type of caregiving situation, the caregiving spouse dies before the person that's being cared for because the stress is really on the caregiving spouse. So all the stress-related illnesses happen to the caregiver, not to the person being cared for. So, yeah, vitally important.
Yeah, it truly is. And, you know, you can't say enough about that. You have to take care of yourself. Now, you know, you look for support groups and then you look at services. And, you know, everybody is different. Everybody's situations are different. So can you give us some examples of what kinds of services might be available to people, maybe in general, and then, you know, maybe kind of break it down a little bit for different types or, you know, whatever?
Sure. Well, I mean, like we said earlier, everybody's situation is different. I would like to, at this point, sort of recommend if people have access to the internet that they could look at our caregivercentral.org site. That's not our website. That is a tool that we developed for caregivers. It's caregivercentral.org. And if you go onto that site, that tool will ask you questions. It takes about 10 minutes to complete this. It's a survey, and it's a weighted survey. So at the after you complete it, the results will be a list of services that you would likely benefit from based on your responses to the questions asked. The survey itself is kind of enlightening for people because it asks you how many hours do you spend per week or per day caring for the person. Some people never even think about that. Think about how much time they're actually spending caring for the person. You know, what type of activities are you involved in with helping care for the person? Are you just doing the checkbook and driving to the grocery store? Are you actually taking somebody to the bathroom and helping them with their personal care? You know, there's a whole, you know, continuum of different tasks that people can be involved in. And so once you assess that and do, you know, giving your own opinions, both about your health and the person you're caring for's health, then they give you this list. And the list, there are up to 9 different services that you could potentially benefit from based on your responses. So it won't necessarily give you all 9. It'll give you the ones related to what you've described as your situation. And then say that adult daycare is one of the services that's listed. You can click on adult daycare and it will define what adult daycare is, because a lot of people have never heard of that. If you haven't had a need for it, you wouldn't know what it is. So the site will define what adult daycare is. It will tell you how to choose a quality provider of that service. And if you live here in Central Florida, if you choose to click further, it'll give you a list of providers that are vetted providers of that service in this community. So that can be a really vital, yes. And in the introduction, when you were talking about the 14 grants from the Harry and Jeanette Weinberg Foundation, that grant was the one that we used to create the caregivercentral.org tool to help people to kind of basically do an inventory of what they're involved in terms of caregiving, and then using that inventory to translate into potential services. So that's a great tool right there. So I'd recommend that, caregivercentral.org, going there. And then if you want to learn about the services that share the – and also back on caregivercentral.org, it'll also list different resources that you can – look into for different specific categories like Alzheimer's and dementia and Parkinson's and stroke and things like that. There are some links to different resources for that. If you decide to use services and, you know, based on your survey, you have interest in services that Share the Care provides, you can go to our website, which is helpforcaregivers.org. So helpforcaregivers.org, and that will tell you all the Share the Care services, you know, what we do, the history of the organization, people that work here, show you where the daycares are, the different educational programs and support groups that we put on, as well as all about our daycare, our home care. One of the services that we provide that's really important, I'm sure that you saw it with your mom, is that we provide mental health counseling in the home for caregivers, because caregivers often are homebound because of their caregiving responsibility. But also statistically, if diagnosed, 70% of caregivers would be considered depressed. So mental health counseling is something that people should avail themselves of.
70%
of caregivers, family caregivers, if they went through the diagnostic process, if they went, they were diagnosed, would be determined to be depressed based on the losses that they experience as caregivers.
That's huge. That's just huge.
Yeah, it's huge. And then, and of course, that's another reason why their health suffers too. So, you know, you don't eat right when you're depressed. You don't exercise. You don't do the things that you want to do. You're not motivated. And you're using all your energy to care for somebody else. So anyway, we do provide mental health counseling and support groups for caregivers. We provide our educational opportunity in the fall. This year it will be September 27th to 29th at the Mission Inn. It's, we call it the Caregiver Forum. And caregivers come and there are all kinds of educational sessions. But they're not about the things that are wrong with the person that you're caring for. So it's not ABCs of Alzheimer's or, you know, different treatments for Parkinson's. It's different ways, different mechanisms caregivers can use to strengthen themselves emotionally, physically, and spiritually. So it's a very cool opportunity, and it's available to all caregivers, and the information's on our website. So if anybody listening today is interested in going, I hope that they tune in and find out about it, because it's a lot of fun. You meet other caregivers, go to a beautiful place, eat wonderful meals, have a break from caregiving for a few days, which we can help you with, figure out how to do that. And also, you're going to leave a stronger person with some actual mechanisms to use at home to maintain that strength. So that's the kind of stuff that we provide. And that's our helpforcaregivers.org is our website. So make sure you, and if you don't use the web, then our phone number is 407-423-5311. I know some people still use the phone, right?
Yeah, really. Why don't you say that number again?
It's 407-423-5311.
Okay, perfect. Now, just so we cover things, what types of services might be available for people, just in general, just as examples? Like, because, you know, when you get into this, you don't know that, that there might be community resources or governmental resources or anything. You just know that you need help, but you don't know where to turn. I'll use my mom example. She's not here. She's in a different state, and I contacted the Area Agency for Aging, and we had them come out and look at her situation, and she was able to get assistance with a stair lift for her basement. So that is being installed. And I had no idea that they did stuff like that. I just knew that they had some resources, so I figured I'll just check it out and see what might be available to her.
I've not heard of anybody getting that down here, so just all of the listeners here in Florida, don't get your hopes up, because I haven't heard of that being covered, financially covered. Of course, it's available if people can pay for it, but you can get grab bars in your bathroom and, you know, make your home accessible in other ways. There is funding for that. There's funding for non-durable medical supplies beyond the normal Medicare, where people Medicare covers things like wheelchairs and hospital beds and things like that. The funding that Share the Care has will also provide some support for incontinence supplies and nutritive drinks and things like that. So those things can be covered. If people can afford to pay, there's, you know, unlimited amount of things that they could do in terms of private help, you know, hire somebody to come in and be alternative caregiver while you're not able to, as well as different home health agencies. And there are dozens of them that are available, and you can look them up. I think they're still yellow pages, but you can also Google for home health, for home care. A lot of people think, the very first thing that people think is if they want a break, they want home care. But I really suggest that if the person's physically able, that you look into adult daycare, because it's a social and interactive opportunity for the person, you know, they're getting out of the house and being around other people, and it's a longer day off for less money, basically, for the caregiver. So, I mean, it's something to look into.
And then
the overnight rest.
I'm sorry, that's generally a private pay situation on the adult daycare?
No, there are all kinds of different subsidies to help with it. We Share the Care has both state and federal funding. If people are on the Medicaid long-term care program, we said at the beginning, we will take payment from them. We're a vendor to them. And, you know, also people that have access to VA benefits, and a lot of people don't even know what they are eligible for in the VA, and it is kind of a difficult system to work through. But there are a lot of resources available for people in terms of home care out of the VA if you're eligible, and that they will pay for, so in terms of subsidies. So, I mean, I think that once people are to the point that they're willing to accept some help, the help is there. And if you can hook up with the right agency, and, you know, the local people can call us, but like you said, perfectly good advice, call your area agency on aging. And there's one in every part of the country. It's a mandate that there be one everywhere. And they have all the information about the different subsidized programs that are available, as well as if you're able to pay, they can give you a list of the ones that will take payment for care. So, you know, it's there. I think that the burden, there are a lot of people that don't know where to call. But once you start calling, I think that, if you're tenacious and you, like I know that you probably had no problem with it because you're an organizer and all of that. And you probably made lists and all about, who to call and when. But
right.
I think that once you get through that confusing place that in some communities there's so many different providers and it's difficult to get to where you need. Once you get to where you need, there are services available pretty much everywhere for folks. So
okay.
I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, actually it does. And you know, it helps because people need to know. For me, I knew where to start because I'm very familiar with the population and the healthcare side of that. So I had resources that most people don't have. And when I didn't know something, I could easily turn to somebody and say, I know you deal with this more than I do. Tell me what to do. But for most people, they don't have resources like that. They are not inside the healthcare system in any way, shape, or form. So they don't really understand that they are they rely on their doctors. They rely on what a nurse might have said while somebody was in the hospital. They rely on their neighbors because people have been through this. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're getting good solid direction as to where to start, which is why we're doing this show. It's almost like, I've seen people just kind of walk in circles going, I don't know what to do. And you just want to take them, you want to hug them first, and you want to say, it's going to be okay, and start here. But then, they get so overwhelmed, too, because the reality of the situation is that you get overwhelmed because there's so much to do, and you have to sit down and do the research, but if you're the primary caregiver and you're still trying to do the research, you're in the middle of maybe getting something done, and then there goes Dad with his dementia off somewhere where you have to hang up the phone or you have to stop doing what you're doing and take care of Dad because he's about to hurt himself or get into something. So then you start all over again. And by the time the day is over, you're completely exhausted. I put that out there for people to understand that, yes, Everybody that's been in this situation has been through things like that, and that it can be done, and it just takes some extra diligence, and it's hard. It's hard work.
Well, the thing is if you're depressed, which we just stated that 70% of caregivers are depressed, that means first of all you're exhausted and you have no motivation and your mind is not clear because you're depressed. Plus, you have all of these responsibilities, you know, on a daily basis that you have no choice, but you must actually fulfill, you know, you can't leave the personal care for later. It has to be taken care of now, all of that. You use up all of your energy on the thing of the moment instead of making the plan. So, you know, and that is a reality for people. But I'll tell you that I've actually seen it many, many times over the many years that I've worked with family caregivers. I've seen the light bulb go on for people when they finally do reach out and they see that there is something, and then they start to actually utilize some services and take some help. I've seen people change very quickly and improve because they realize, number one, they're not alone. Number two, that their person that they're caring for will survive if they let somebody else take care of them for a few hours. And number three, yes, they can still have a life of their own too. And I've seen people change in it. And you know, so yes, there's that dark time, that time of no motivation and unwillingness to plan or just inability to plan because of your physical and mental state. But then, you know, and sometimes it's facilitated by the concern of others, that people kind of demand that you take services. I got a phone call this week from a lady who heard me do a presentation at a church probably 2 months ago. I gave this presentation, and she goes, well, you may remember me. You talked to me. And I'm like, yeah, based on what she said, I remembered who she was. And she goes, well, Debbie, or I don't remember the woman's name, but Debbie at church keeps asking me if I've called you yet. And so finally I just told her, okay, I was going to do it. And she did. So she called me and she talked to me. And then from that phone call this week, I told her about support group coming up on Friday and she agreed to come. I told her that she could bring her husband and have him at the daycare center during the support group meeting. So this opportunity, she'll find out that her husband will probably do fine in daycare, so she'll have access to that as a service. She'll meet some other caregivers, so she won't feel so sad and alone, because she definitely was feeling sad and alone. But it's somebody else nagged her and to the point of doing it, where left on her own, it may have taken a lot longer, and she might have made herself a lot sicker. So, you know, I say, you know, if it takes the neighbor coming over or the daughter intervening, I mean, if you care about people and you see them in a desperate situation, make sure that they move, or you go find out all the information and give them the phone number and hand them the phone, or dial the number and hand them the phone, you know, whatever.
Well, I had to get a little more creative, because my mother didn't think that she needed any help whatsoever with my father. She thought that she, you know, what's that all about? I'm just doing what I need to do. I don't need anything. So I actually had my father's caregiver, I called her. I had already looked it up. I had already found a support group locally in her area. And I had the caregiver tell my mother, I said, it's okay to do this. I'm telling you it's okay to do this. I had her tell my mother that she needed to go to this support group because she needed to learn some things, and would my mother mind going with her? So
very, very clever. Mm-hmm.
She took my mother to the caregiving support for it was an Alzheimer's group. And my mother doesn't ask for anything. My mother doesn't really tell people what she's feeling. She doesn't do anything. She just says things like, are we going to the meeting next month? And that's when we knew that it was important to her, and she never missed a meeting after that.
Right. That's the light bulb coming on, you know, that there are people out there that are like me and can hear me. And that's so important.
But I'm a firm believer that sometimes you have to kind of go outside of that box and be as creative as you need to be in order to get to the end goal of, hey, this is really going to help you, you know?
Yeah. I endorse that methodology. Yes. I think that was very clever on your part. And whatever you have to do to make somebody feel better, you know, white lie or whatever.
To this day, she still thinks it was the caregiver's idea, that the caregiver found that group. She, you know, because, you know, I was her daughter, but I was also in the management mode saying, Mom, you really need a support group, Mom. And all she could hear was me telling her what to do. So
right.
I took that all away, and I said, I got to go a different way here because she has to get to a support group, you know?
Right. You did it. Good for you.
Thank you. That's, you know, you just have to constantly think, and it's exhausting. It truly is. I put that right out there for people. That being said, anybody who wants to ask a question, please do so. Press the number one if you have a question. We do have a couple of questions on the blog that I've been looking at. And I think we've answered most of these questions. If we have not answered your question, signal me, please. Let me see what this one says. Okay, well, here's one. It says, I'm caring for my mom, who is 61 with a disability, but she doesn't qualify for Social Security. I don't really understand why, but she has MS and needs full-time care. Can you steer me in a direction for some assistance? I am here in Orlando.
She can call us because her mom's over 60. The MS, it's difficult with some of the chronic illnesses that usually have onset before 60 because they don't fit into the elderly category, so they don't get they're not under the funding that's for elders. But the cool part about Share the Care is that Share the Care receives the state and federal funding locally for all caregiving, so not just old people caregiving, all caregiving. So the National Family Caregiver Support Act, the requirement for National Family Caregiver Support Act is that one of the parties be over 60. So her mom's over 60, so she already qualifies. And because she qualifies for National Family Caregiver Act, she doesn't have to have a diagnosis of dementia or memory impairment. So we are likely to be able to help this family. So make sure that you either call us at 407-423-5311 or go online, and you can email us from the website, which is helpforcaregivers.org, because yes, we can definitely, at the very least, we can give you information, but it sounds like that we will be able to help that family. So
perfect. Thank you. Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad we got one. That's great. Anybody want to call in a question? Anybody on the phones tonight? We've got a few people on the phones. Anybody want to ask a question to Mary Ellen? Press the number one. And if you are pressing the number one and it's not coming through, I'm just letting you know. I've got nobody that's signaling to me that you have a question. So I'm just letting you know. Here's a new one on the blog. I am 20 in my second year of college, and my dad just became disabled due to an auto accident. I've been researching what I might do, but there is so much information. He's 48. My mom died 3 years ago. Any suggestions?
Well, first of all, if he's disabled, like he can't work, he's going to qualify for disability, SSI disability, which will then qualify him for a lot of long-term care services. I know that is it sounds very complicated, and sometimes it is really complicated, but at the end of it, you will find yourself eligible for a lot of services. So that would be through the Social Security Administration. Disability can be complicated and requires a doctor's, verification. A lot of times people go to attorneys to help them get through the disability process and all of that. But on the other side of that, if you qualify for long-term disability, you will get medical insurance and often many long-term care assisting type of services and also equipment and things like that. Now, if he was in a car accident and he came out of the hospital, hospitals have social workers and it's their job to help families work their way back to home and get the services that they need. So I would definitely ask to speak to a social worker or a case manager at the hospital that he's in, and he may be in a rehab unit now. And if he's in a rehab unit, they have social workers as well. So that would be my suggestion at this point.
Great. Okay. Well, that was great information. Thank you for that, because I don't know that I want to say something, though. I don't know whether this is male or female, a 20-year-old, and that's a lot to be thinking about right now. So please follow those suggestions and get the help that you need, and remember to take care of yourself too. And it's difficult because you're in college, so take advantage of your friends and let them take care of you a little bit. So that'd be great.
Well, yeah, and I think on the flip side of that when people give up their lives to take care of their parents, I think that they need to remember what their parents have been striving for you, for them, for all these years, and that is for them to have an independent and happy life. And mm-hmm. So where you might think that your parent wants you to give up your life to care for them, in reality, if your parent was able to tell you, they would probably tell you that they want you to have a happy and productive life. And, you know, yes, they want to be cared for, but they don't want you to give up everything in order to do that, because actually that's contrary to their whole, you know, their lifetime goal as a parent, you know, is that you give up your life. They want to make sure that you have, I mean, that is our whole, you know, as a parent of three people in their 20s, you know, if they were to somehow have to, like, stop being who they are because I needed them, I would consider it a personal failure. I mean, I'd want them to mm-hmm. feel like they should do it, because that's the definition of good people. But in reality, we can have both. So by getting help, finding out what you're eligible for, you can both be the good child that you want to be because you love your parent, and you give your parent what they want for you, and that is a long, happy, successful life. So.
Well, that's a great point. That's a very good point. I mean, this has to be completely overwhelming for this person. And so, yeah, keep that in mind, because you count too. And I'm sure Mary Ellen's absolutely correct that your parents want you to be independent. You wouldn't be in college if you weren't going to, you know, take on a path for your own life. So, you know, go for it. And you know, remember that. Mary Ellen, we just have a few minutes left. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you wanted to cover tonight that you kind of want to let people know about?
Well, I think that it's time in these days and times of, you know, ever-changing policy and things. I think it's important that people watch what's going on with Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and all of these things, because, you know, I'm not taking a political opinion or position on it, but I'm saying that these, in the case of the adult, the 48-year-old with in the car accident, that's a Social Security program, disability. All of these things are going to be negatively affected by cutting funding to them. And these are the services. A lot of times people think, say, Medicaid is for only, like, poor indigent people. Well, the number one most served population under Medicaid is the elderly. So when mm-hmm. Medicaid gets cut, it's not just cutting poor people or, you know, or people that don't work. It's just cutting, you know, elderly people that worked all their lives that now are dependent on this for not only their health insurance, but also their long-term care services. So, you know, I think I just would want everybody to just keep their eyes and ears open about what's going on with funding, and making your opinion known to the people that you've elected to office about what direction you'd like to see that go. I think that it's all of our responsibility to be able to attend to, you know, our future care. I'm hoping for Social Security one day. I don't know about you, but, you know, we have to keep an eye on that to make sure that we can be independent and not be a burden to our children, and on and on and on. It's a big circle of life. So, you know, that's my apolitical statement for today. Just keep an eye on it, everybody. It's important.
I think it's a great statement make. And, you know, politics aside, in terms of partisan, you know, politics or whatever, this is something that impacts all of us, regardless of party and regardless of what we might think. Because, okay, we're all here tonight talking about caregiving, and we just said how many people are impacted by caregiving, and it's pretty much all of us. And eventually, those people that for which we're caring are going to need some kind of Medicaid services. And if the politicians decide to cut those, think about where you are, and would you be able to pick up the burden of whatever that cost might be on your own? Because this is how it shapes everybody's futures. So, yeah, it's an apolitical political statement, but it is something for all of us to pay attention to. So I think that's great advice. Thank you. Mary Ellen, thank you so much for tonight. You, again, we're out of time. And as usual, we could talk about this for another how long? I mean, it's just amazing. I can't thank you enough. You've given us wonderful information. You want to give out your websites again and just
sure.
So everybody has it?
Yep. The Caregiver Central is the survey where you can learn about services, caregivercentral.org. Then the website for Share the Care is helpforcaregivers.org. And then our phone number is 407-423-5311. And if any of the people that asked the question today want to call me, they can ask for me at that phone number and remind me that you're the ones with the questions tonight. And particularly people with MS, I'll make sure that I can help you walk through the process.
That's great. Oh, thank you so much. Everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for participating. We are always just so grateful for everybody's time on The Whole Scoop. We look forward to seeing you again in a couple of weeks. Dr. Hulan will be back, and we're going to talk about everything you wanted to know about cholesterol and didn't want to know. And that's going to be a great show because if you've listened to him before, he's just a plethora of information. Mary Ellen, I would love to have you back. I would love to talk with you. Maybe we'll kind of shape the conversation a little differently and kind of go with how people are impacted socially and kind of talk about that next time if you're interested.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. I'm going to say goodnight for now and see you in a couple of weeks. And I hope if you need the show, it's always in the archives. Listen to it over and over again if you need to and get what you need. Thanks, Mary Ellen. Thank you so much, everybody. Good night.
Night.